This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast.
The Hidden Killers Podcast.
With Tony Bruschi.
We're going to dive into the defense a little bit more of Lori Vallow Daybell and what's going on right now in her trial with Alexandra Kazarian. She's a criminal defense attorney with Garagos & Garagos. She's one of the best out there, and I'm very interested to run everything that we've seen thus far in the trial over the last week through her prism and through her mind, and to get her feedback as to where she thinks things are at, where they might be going, and how reasonable doubt could be put into the mind of the jurors of Lori Vallow Daybell not having been involved in the murder of her children. With that said, Alexandra, welcome. I'm just going to let you kind of take off from there.
I think that the defense is actually doing a really good job for Lori, because I think they're doing the best that they can to humanize her. Mm-hmm. Her attorney's opening statement, you know, really focused on the fact that you're going to hear some terrible things that happened by people that are not Lori. And really asking the jury to focus on Lori and Lori alone, mm-hmm. and where she was at the time of these alleged killings, and not to look at them together, but to look at Lori very, very specifically on her own. Because even if she was wrapped up in this, I don't want to say plan, because that's not going to help the defense, but even if, you know, they had the same kind of mentality about people. Yeah. If she wasn't there, and if there's no actual evidence that she had a conversation with her husband about killing her children, mm-hmm. then there is a possibility that she just did not know, and that this was his plan, and that she didn't participate. She had nothing to do with it. So if the defense can convince the jury that there is a chance that she was separate from this action, then she may have a chance. And also, I think it was genius. Well, I don't know if it was contrived, but I think it was a great thing for the defense to argue that she wanted to be removed from the proceedings because it was just too hard for her to listen to the evidence. Mm-hmm. Very humanizing. You know, what mother would be able to sit there and listen to the kind of evidence about their children that they're hearing? And so I think that was great for the humanization of her.
Do you think that was contrived? Do you think that was really a calculated move on the part, or was this Lori beginning to show some cracks with such harsh information coming to light that it doesn't, you know, work with her mindset at all, because it contradicts her whole belief system?
Well, you know, one thing that I don't really think has been highlighted, it wasn't obvious from the beginning to me, at least, and you know, I should have known, and I really realized it lately, is that this case has been going on for so long because she was declared incompetent.
Yeah.
And she was sent through rehabilitation, and they didn't start the trial until she came back and was competent again. And I have seen that before. I think I talked about it last time, that I've seen situations where parents do terrible things to their children because they are mentally incompetent. And when they come back, it is absolutely unbearable for them to be faced with accusations that they did these things to people they love. So to me, it is expected that if she was rehabilitated, and if this was something that happened while she was on a mental health break, that is exactly the way that she would act. Uh-huh. So, and you know, I understand. I drink the Kool-Aid. I'm a defense attorney, so I am always looking at it from the defense side.
Sure.
But I also believe that a mother especially has got to be on some kind of psychotic break in order to do this to their children, unless it's just somebody who from the very beginning of their life has shown an indifference to human life and is just, you know, the kind of person that would lash out at every single person, including their children.
Sure.
If it's a loving mother at any point,
and then this happens, there's some kind of a psychotic break going on. So I don't think it was contrived.
Let me ask you this. We were talking a little bit earlier about if they can show that it was Chad or it was Alex or somebody other than Lori that did this. So she was not at the hand of the shovel or whatever was used. How would it be argued or explained, though, the window of time, the 5-6 months that these children are missing, and she knows that they are missing, that she just didn't care?
Well, that's a different crime. That's a different situation. At that point, I'm sure the defense may argue that if she was aware that her husband had just brutally murdered her children, she's afraid for her own life and for her remaining children. And so the only thing that she can do to protect herself and everybody else in the family is to just stay with him and make sure that he doesn't do this to anybody else. Now, I think that's going to be a hard sell if you're simultaneously arguing that she's not mentally competent, because how can she have this contrived plan to protect people if at the same time you're saying she was so out of her mind, she had no idea what she was doing? I do think that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand how one could try and argue that, maybe Chad did it or Alex did the actual murder, but the conspiracy to be part of this or to have some knowledge, it doesn't add up. And for her to be not competent, what are we considering competent here? She went on vacation in Hawaii with Chad, had multiple conversations with people that did seem to be competent Lori, but very much believing that the religious fervor that Chad had been preaching and believing that it was right. Like whatever path it is where these people become zombies and they die or they go away, it's like she's operating as if this is reality, which I think she was doing. Does that hurt or help her? The fact that she was so in deep on this and truly believing it.
You just made an argument for her being mentally incompetent.
Yeah.
That's believing a alternate reality that is actively being involved in and living in a reality that doesn't exist. And so that's just one prong of an insanity defense. Mm-hmm. But I think that's going to be the problem for the prosecution, is that the jury, when they're having these conversations at the end of the case, are going to do exactly that. They're going to say, she was out of her mind believing all this religious extremism. Mm-hmm. And again, like we talked about before, if they have anybody who is religious, not spiritual, but religious, deeply religious, that's going to be offensive to say, how could she believe this? Or if somebody thinks she actually did believe this, then you're making an argument for an insanity defense at that point. So it's going to be very hard for the prosecution. It's going to be hard for both, but it's going to be hard for the prosecution to separate the undisputed fact at this point that she was deep in this religious belief and that she also knew that killing her children was wrong. So if she was deep in this religious belief and knew that her husband killed her children, but also believed that they were evil, then if the jury can be convinced that there's not enough evidence to prove that she actively participated in killing her children, then where's the crime? If she believes this religious belief that her children are evil, and she believes that her husband killed them and stayed with him after that point, there's no crime there. It's horrific, but that's not a crime. So if the jury walks away thinking that, then she walks.
But wouldn't the crime be not reporting the death, not reporting the murders of her children in a situation like that?
As far as I know, she's not charged with that.
True. But because insanity is not a defense in Idaho.
Right. And I do talk about it as a defense, as an affirmative defense.
Yeah.
But and I should separate that because it is in California, but in Idaho it's not. But there's no, you cannot impute guilt to somebody that didn't actively participate in the crime. So if the jury doesn't, if the jury believes that there is a reasonable, plausible chance that she did not actively participate in the killings themselves, then it doesn't matter if she knew about it.
But what
it doesn't matter if she knew about it 5 months later.
Isn't that part of the conspiracy, though, of she doesn't necessarily have to have the shovel. She just needs to be aware and had some sort of verbal part in this or agreement with the parties involved that this is the best path or what was done is correct. Isn't that part of being in part of the conspiracy?
There's got to be an agreement beforehand.
Okay.
And there's got to be an act in furtherance. So, so yes, that is why the conspiracy is charged. But again, if they can convince the jury that she did not know that he was actually going to kill them at mm-hmm. that time, that there was a plan mm-hmm. and that there was an act in furtherance, then she's not part of the conspiracy. Because that agreement has to come before the crime.
Sure.
So, I mean, unless the jury is convinced that he said something to her, they had a conversation to the effect of, I'm going to kill the children. Mm-hmm. And she said, okay. Yeah. Or, even if he said, I'm going to kill the children, and she said, okay, but didn't do anything to participate in the conspiracy, it has to be, we need to kill the children. We are going to come up with this plan to kill the children. If the jury can be convinced that that conversation itself may not have happened and that she had may found out about it afterwards and understood why it happened, but that there was no conversation about it, then she's not part of the conspiracy before.
And this is why you're as good as you are. You found a way to almost convince me that maybe.
Hey, there you go.
This is an examination of the hidden human condition.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast
with Tony Bruschi,
Alexandra Kazarian, criminal defense attorney, Garagos and Garagos. Always a pleasure to have you on and get your insight. If you like the show, become a subscriber, a premium subscriber through Apple Podcasts. You can get everything ad-free. Go and check that out there. Or just press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any breaking updates, discussions, and live courtroom coverage as we bring it to you here on the podcast. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.